I love scotch.
Have another whiskey.
If you'd like to speak to me in person, press 1. If you'd like to order drugs, press hash.
I had a gentleman in the crowd that was like, tell me how to drink Glenfiddich. And I was like, I will not do that.
Yep.
You drink Glenfiddich how you want to drink Glenfiddich.
Wear a cowboy hat in Los Angeles and look at the amount of looks you get.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. This is the most flamboyant city on earth. You wear a cowboy hat, people look at you like you are like an alien.
The Beatles came on and they picked me up on his shoulder. George Harrison is as close to me as that wall now. I went, all right, George, all right. And he went, cock. And that was the closest I ever came to the Beatles.
Have a whiskey while we...
Yeah, let's do it again.
Yeah.
Cheers, long.
Cheers. Welcome back to United States of Dramerica, and here we are about to drink some whiskey. This is going to be a very sport-heavy with some drinking podcast. I am delighted to have on the show, he is currently the president of the LA Sports Council, Dave Siegel. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So I do want to know about the LA Sports Council, and I know our listeners do as well, but I want to start with some inside baseball, as it were, because obviously your career before you joined an industry body was in baseball, and it sounds like you've basically done almost literally every job that you could do at the Dodgers apart from pitching and catching.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did some of that too, which I'll share with you.
So tell me the short version of why you love sports so much and the highlights of your career in sports.
Wow. I mean, so, you know, LA kid born and raised, played baseball in college, had no idea what I wanted to do. I applied for an internship my senior year at UC San Diego, got it, started working for the Dodgers, an unpaid intern 3 days after I graduated from college. That just dates me, Dan, because back then, apparently you could work for free. Now that's frowned upon these days. So that just, and by the way, for the record, when I started the Dodgers, email wasn't a thing. Like we were just getting emails. So that kind of frames it for you. But yeah, but no, 22 years, 4 ownership changes at the Dodgers, everything from in bankruptcy to World Series and everything in between. You know, I think at the end of the day, the answer to your question is, you know, very few jobs where you get to work for a brand that stirs up so much emotion and energy, and that's bigger than you. You know what I mean? I mean, everyone has a memory of going to Dodger Stadium for the first time or eating a Dodger dog. And the funny thing I like to say is when I ask people, oh, your first game, you know, who won? They don't remember your last game that you went to, really any match. I think very rarely does a casual fan, specifically in baseball, remember who won or lost the game. It was, this is what I ate, this is who I was with, this is the fun that we had, you know, and that to me is what sports is all about.
Absolutely. So we should open some whiskey, actually, because I will sometimes forget this podcast to talk about whiskey. I'm going to pour mine in a second. Dave, at the other end of the Zoom, what whiskey have you got in your hand?
So I've got some Johnny Walker Black Label right now.
Just fantastic.
Easy drinking whiskey on a Wednesday evening. So
I'm not showing off, but I always try and pair my whiskey with my guest. And I was trying to sort of think of what whiskey to do. And at the LA Sports Council, I know you do an annual awards, and I was looking through the list of sponsors to see if any of them were whiskey brands. And Jim Beam are one of the sponsors,
yep.
But I'm not going to, no offense to Jim Beam, but I'm not drinking Jim Beam on this podcast. I try and drink scotch. And I was thinking, I'll think about the Dodgers. And I was thinking, should we try and work out who the sponsors of the Dodgers are? And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to go with the colors. So I've also got Johnny Walker, but I've got Johnny Walker Blue.
I love that. A lot of great memories drinking a lot of that Johnny Walker Blue in my office at Dodger Stadium after celebratory wins. So that is a great one to go with.
Is that right? Do they drink Johnny Walker Blue?
We did a marketing deal with Johnny Walker Blue Label, Dodger Blue, and we would etch the bottles for some of our top clients and kind of give them away as a, you know, when we made the playoffs or won the division, you know what I mean? So cheers. But so needless to say, there was always a lot of leftover bottles and some just happened to walk home with me once in a while.
It's funny how that happens in sports. It's actually in the 80 something episodes of this podcast, I have never, we always drink whiskey and obviously since the pandemic and we do them all on Zoom, I've never actually been in the position where I'm drinking a better whiskey than the guest. It's normally we try and pair it equally, but I've never sort of had them drinking a 12-year-old. I want an 18-year-old. But this was just I was trying to do the Dodgers thing. So
I love that.
I'm sorry that you're on the black tonight, but the black.
No,
is-
no. I was hoping you were going there. So I like that.
Excellent. So actually, baseball's fascinating to me. So a lot of English people don't like baseball because they don't know what it is. And, you know, for the casual people who don't know what it is, they think it's sort of a long, boring game, which is ironic because the English version of baseball is cricket, where you can have a 5-day game and still have no results. So there is, it seems an unfair comparison. I've always loved baseball. I went to university in Canada for a year. So I used to go and watch Toronto play a lot. So I got to see a lot of live sport in very cheap tickets because we were students. And I fell in love with the game and understand it, you know, enough that I can really get into it. But it is fascinating to me that I think there was a statistic that was quoted to me by a colleague who used to work in baseball that something like 70% of people, when they leave baseball games, they don't know the score. And as a football person, so I think it's the opposite. If you ask me, like the last time I watched a team play, I'd tell you the score and maybe who scored. But actually, with baseball, if you ask me the last time I went to Dodger Stadium, all I remember was there was more than 8 runs scored because I'd bet the over at 7.5. And I remember winning. And I also remember I was in the club seats. Yep. And I remember trying to eat a Dodger dog, won every innings. And I had to stop at 5 because it was too much for me. But I don't remember who they played. And I don't remember the final score. So I guess I'm a typical visitor to Dodger Stadium and maybe baseball in America. Is that odd? Because I guess, were you a sports team or were you an entertainment brand?
You know, I got to be honest. I think now they're synonymous. It's the same. You know, I'll say this. Working for the Dodgers, you know, it's got it's the third oldest stadium in baseball. The organization, the ownership groups over the years have done an amazing job bringing that stadium into the 21st century. But, you know, Dan, the modern fan back in the day, yeah, you'd sit in your seat for all 9 innings and you're keeping score during the game. The modern fan these days, they do not want to sit in their seats, maybe at all, by the way, for the record. You know what I mean? They want to walk around. They want to go to different areas of activation. They want to take a selfie and post on social media somewhere, iconic, you know, view that can be, you know, that's can be shown that they were at the game. And so I don't think it's weird. I think you've evolved to a modern fan. And that's what the challenge, I think, with all sports teams have these days, besides the battle for discretionary income and, you know, how tough that is with everything going on, especially in this market. I don't need to tell you, but I think it's, you know, really, I think you're seeing more and more teams invest in entertainment or these other areas for people to kind of walk around and be active outside of just the game. That makes sense.
It does. And where it gets interesting is I think all of that is true, but if they win, there's more cheering. I don't know if the sort of per caps go up on concessions, but people leave happier. They're more likely to come back. And obviously, particularly nearer the end of the season, more people do come. So you're right. It's a weird thing where they sort of don't care, but they also do care.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you when the team's not winning, this goes for any team. I'll just insert Dodgers because I was there for so long. But, you know, the beer is warm. The dogs are cold. When you're winning, you know what I mean? Everything is perfect. It's great. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? And I always said sports is kind of recession proof. If you're winning championships, it doesn't matter kind of what's going on because people want to be there, especially in this town where everyone's excited about the hot new, you know, new kid on the block. You look at SoFi Stadium, brand new stadium. You look at what the Clippers are building with Intuit Dome across the street. Angel City Football Club just had their first home game a couple of days ago, last Friday, to an amazing sellout crowd. And so, but to me, it's really that sustainability. And you look at the Dodgers, who draw, gosh, nearly 4 million a year. It's seemingly, no matter win or lose, but I will say, just because I was in that role, is definitely challenging. You know what I mean? To keep that up, and not easy, especially in this market. So
this is a bit of an English question, but
yeah. There
is a lot of baseball. So I work for a soccer team or a football team. We have a game at home on average every sort of 10 days to 2 weeks, depending on the schedule. And, you know, you have a game. There's very unlikely to be a game for at least a week. During the, you know, post-pandemic in the first year, sometimes the turnaround was 4 days, but normally it's a good, clear week. In baseball, you're playing potentially 3 days in a row against the same opponent. How do you sell tickets to people? Because it can't be sort of come and see us play the Texans and again. You know, like, I just, it's tough, must be tough.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not 3 days in a row. It's really on a homestand. It could be nine, you know, over the course of 10 days, you've got, you know, nine games basically, you know, at times. And so it's challenging. I mean, I think we worked really hard to try to appeal to market. I'll tell you a story just to give you an example of kind of what we did. I got laughed out of the boardroom when I wanted to do, this was 8, 9, 10 years ago, when the new ownership group just bought the Dodgers, Guggenheim. I wanted to do a Hello Kitty night at Dodger Stadium. And I literally got laughed out of the boardroom. And I said, look, I get it, but this kitty cat is 20 times more popular than the Dodgers. Sorry to break it. She has so many more followers. It's more of a world-renowned brand. You know what I mean? And so I literally went back again. We did a deal with Sanrio and did it. We sold out Dodger Stadium when we were terrible. That's 55,000 seats, largest stadium in baseball. We sold it out a game in 3 days, midweek, against the Brewers, who were terrible at the time. But it just goes to show, and the answer, roundabout answer to your question is, you put promotions, you put bobbleheads, again, entertainment, Star Wars night. You get creative and think about ways to make it different, because 81 home games, you know, to your point, when you're playing the same teams over and over in the NL West, or at the very least the same team 3 days in a row, you know what I mean? You gotta work hard to really make each game stand alone as its own kind of event, entertainment event, you know what I mean? And that's what I think the Dodgers have done a really good job doing over the years.
Yeah, it's very difficult. As an English person, like, when we watch football, we watch sport. You go and watch the game, you know, you go to the pub for a few hours before you turn up, you watch the game, you go home, that's it. Yeah. And I think when I'm working for a football team over here, it's so odd. I remember, I think, working on some promotion stuff. So we have a mascot, which we didn't have when I joined, and I helped, like, develop the mascot. And there's a part of me that died inside, knowing that I was helping a team get a mascot, because that's not the football part. But we got a mascot. The fans love it. People take pictures. It helps with promotion. We sell merchandise. You know, it's just, there is that entertainment thing. And actually, we did a partnership this week with an Orange County band called Social Distortion, who are huge.
Congratulations.
Band.
I love Social D.
Yeah, we did a partnership with them, and we sold more merchandise off the back of that partnership in 24 hours than we did the night that we won the championship.
There you go. I mean, that's what I'm
saying.
It's
crazy to me.
Yeah.
But I guess, so if I'd been in the boardroom a year ago and you'd said, I've got a Hello Kitty idea, I would think it's terrible. But based on what I've seen in the last few weeks, I'd be like, why wouldn't you work with a bigger brand? Because it's funny where people come from.
And it's one thing to be a bigger brand, but it's also a different brand. Exposing Social Distortion fans to create awareness. Do you know what I mean? That you guys are there and you're winning and you're successful. And it's a great game day experience. I think it's just as much of a win exposing your brand to an audience that wouldn't normally come across your brand.
Yeah. So that's this is a bit sort of nuts and bolts for you and for us in the sports industry, but I think people who don't work in sport will be interested in this, which is from a sort of not work-life balance point of view, but when there's a game, like it's, you presumably, you have to be there a few hours before and, you know, you can't leave in the seventh inning. You're staying till after the game. Is that not a brutal living existence, particularly in a basketball and baseball where there is so many, there just are so many games?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all I knew for the longest time. And so I didn't really have any perspective, but I will tell you, I mean, baseball especially. So I'll just paint the picture for you. You got to work Monday through Friday. Say the team comes in on a Friday and leaves on the next Sunday. You're not getting a day off for 3 weeks. You got to work Monday through Friday. You're working all weekend. You're working all next week. And the next weekend, team leaves on Sunday. You still got to come in on Monday to the following Friday. And so I think, you know, I love working in sports. I love it. But I think, you know, definitely the innocence is taken away. You get to see kind of the dirty underbelly, maybe, if you will. I don't know the exact term to use, but, you know, you kind of see behind the proverbial curtain, so to speak, that coupled with the hours. And it's it can be a real grind. I did it for 22 years and I wouldn't trade 1 minute in the last 22 years for anything. But, you know, when I accepted the role to be president of the LA Sports Council, you know, I leave and the sun rises and other people in LA do commerce besides just the Dodgers. It was shocking to me because I thought the world revolved around Dodger Stadium. You know, you're so laser focused on the attendance, the next promotion, the next game, the, you know, what's going on. And people don't realize, Dan, at least in baseball, and I'm sure in soccer too, you start planning the next season literally the summer before. So right now, through the halls of Dodger Stadium, they're starting to talk about the 2023 season already, you know. So.
It's crazy. I remember when I was a sports journalist in my first career, I loved it. I was meeting all these players, getting in the locker room. I had teams that I covered who won the championship, and we were like at the hotel with the players in the private party. You know, it's such an insight into the game. But towards the end, I remember I was covering a game, and I think there was a last-minute winner in a football game, and I was irritated because I had to completely rewrite my story.
And then I
didn't fall out of love with sport, but it made it, it became very work. And presumably in a baseball game, if the Dodgers are down sort of three runs in the ninth and then it ends up going to extra innings, you know, as you should be pleased, but presumably you'd be like, oh, here we go. You know, I'm not going to get home till 3 a.m. now. It, you know, did you lose some of that love for the sport?
You know, I will say I've refound the love now that it's not as close to me. And now I can enjoy it again as a fan. That, remember, think about it. I wasn't able to go to Dodger State, frankly, any baseball game as a fan in 22 years, you know? And so I was always representing the Dodgers. I had to wear slacks and nice shirts and sport coats. And that's, you want to go in flip-flops and shorts on a midsummer night, you know, in LA and drink a beer and have a dog and talk with your friends and have one too many beers. That's what it's about. And so now that I'm able to do that, I would say, yes, I didn't realize I had lost it, but absolutely. And I've fallen back in love with just sports in general, I think, again, now that I have some distance or perspective, I'll say.
So also, apart from the baseball part, if you went along to, you know, a basketball game or whatever it is, or a hockey game, do you find yourself looking around going, oh, that's an interesting sponsor that I haven't thought of? And how did they do the ticketing for this? And that's a clever promotion or an ad on the video board. Do you just find yourself in that sort of stuck in that loop?
And that's what I was saying. The innocence is taken away. So if I went to a game, my friend sitting next to me that's in a different industry, I'm looking at, to your point, how they dress the stadium. What are the sponsors? What are the pregame and in-game activations? Like, are the suites full? Like, how many? You know, where my friend sitting right next to me, all they're looking at is, you know, what's going on down on the court, or, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. And so, yes, like that part was definitely stripped for, you know, I think will always be, by the way, because, you know, I'm still working in sports. I, you know, was at, with a club for 22 years. And so I think, but I gotta say too, I'm kind of a geek about it. I love talking shop. I love talking ticket sales and promotion, corporate partnerships. You know, I kind of geek out on it still, but it's nice to not have my livelihood or how much money I make in a year. Kind of, you know, I like telling other people my opinion, but, like, you know what I mean? It's not necessarily relying on me. So.
Yeah. And obviously, because you're from LA, presumably you were a Dodgers fan as a kid.
Yeah.
So I guess there's two sides to this. So one side is you will have met the players. You would have probably been in the locker room at certain times, which is every fan's dream. But then also you would have, you know, seen ownership mistakes. You probably would have seen people getting fired and all that. So does being on the inside as a fan, does that make, was it a better experience for the good stuff or a worse experience because of the bad stuff?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, I have so many amazing stories. You know, you mentioned I didn't pitch or hit, but I got called on one time my earliest to throw batting practice at Dodger Stadium because the left-handed batting practice pitcher has a day job and he got caught in traffic and they needed someone to throw. And I pitched in college. So I got to throw batting practice. I got to watch a postseason game in the owner's suite with Sandy Koufax and Tommy Lasorda and hear them talk baseball. I was in the, yeah, I've been in the dugout in the locker room for champagne celebrations. And so the highs are so high and intoxicating, you know what I mean? But the lows, the team got sold literally four times over my tenure there. I saw so many of my friends get fired and hired and fired, and you're reproving yourself to new leadership every couple of years. And it, you know, that coupled with, to your point earlier, the number of games and the hours that you're spending there was really, really hard. So I answered a good question. I would say the highs were really, really high and the lows were really, you know, you take it so personally, you know what I mean? Because you're so invested in any organization that you work with and for, you know? And so, I mean, I guess as I say all that, I wouldn't have traded one second in the last 22 years for anything. So I would say maybe the highs were higher than the lows, yeah. You know, because if it was the other way around, I wouldn't have been there for 22 years.
So let's talk about what you're actually doing now. So I imagine unless you're in sports, you won't know what the LA Sports Council does. You know, you're not a consumer facing brand. So for those people listening, thinking, who the hell is this guy? Why did I invite him on the podcast? Sure. What do the LA Sports Council do under your leadership, Dave? Sure.
So I'll start with what we were. So we're a legacy organization that was born in LA after the Olympic movement here in LA in 84 to really bring economic impact to the region. So what does that mean? That means bringing back the Olympics. That was like the main thing, but also bringing in other major events, you know, Super Bowls, college football championships, all-star games, those kinds of things. And it was run the same way by the same guy for 30 plus years. It was his baby. He kind of was his idea to start it. And when we got the bid for the 28 games, he decided to retire and they found me and the opportunity to kind of think through narrative 2.0 of this legacy organization and where we go next was really exciting to me, again, as a born and raised Angeleno, to get to do something a little more broad, that has a little more broad of an impact than, I mean, frankly, making a billionaire richer, you know what I mean, by selling corporate partnerships and sponsorships and ticket sales. So I was ready to do something new for a while. And the way I'm pivoting the organization slightly, but in short, where we're going moving forward is really to be that trade organization for sports in Los Angeles, that connective thread with the sports business industry. You know, being a third party, Dan, we can do things and pull organizations together in ways they wouldn't normally do on their own. And we do all this with community impact being above economic impact. So really harnessing that collective power of the sports industry for positive community impact is really, that's my, like, you know, 20-second, you know, elevator pitch on kind of where we're going, what we're doing. And the main reason why, you know, I don't want to hang our hat on bidding on these major events is, quite frankly, when I got here, all those major events are already coming to town. I mean, already locked and loaded in LA over the next 6 years. You've got MLB All-Star Game. Well, you just had the Super Bowl, Major League Baseball All-Star Game, US Open of Golf, College Football Championship, World Cup, and the Olympics. And by the way, probably five or six other things I forgot to mention are coming over the next 6 years. And those things are probably, in the best case scenario, not coming back. You know, Olympics, World Cup, not coming back for another 30 plus years, right? Probably. And so in thinking about where do we go next, how do we establish our own lane? I was looking, what does the market need? And working for a club for as long as I did, you know, all these organizations do all these great things, but they really do it kind of in their own vacuum. You know what I mean? Without really engaging other teams and properties and businesses. And so, you know, as you know, our board consists of every professional team in LA and Orange County, will consist of every professional team in LA and Orange County, as well as all the one-off annual events like the Long Beach Grand Prix, Genesis Invitational, LA Marathon, to name a few. And then this cross-section of businesses that intersect the sports business industry, everything from Google Cloud to Coca-Cola to LA Times, financial institutions, et cetera. So really using all those amazing, leveraging is probably not the right word, but you know, using all those great brands and to kind of, again, lift. I'm a big believer in, you know, tides rise all boats, you know, and really kind of, again, like I said, circling back, really be that connective thread in the sports business industry that there really hasn't been ever. So
as you say, I mean, on paper, it doesn't get much better than this, in the sense of, you know, you've got the Dodgers who are winning and one of the biggest brands in sport. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like, it's weird, like the Dallas Cowboys and the Yankees, when they rank the biggest brands, they don't always have to, like, the Cowboys haven't won the Super Bowl for a very long time, but still they're up there. But the Dodgers are a big brand, but they're also winning. You know, the Kings, a playoff team. Mm-hmm. The Lakers have not had a wonderful year, but they won last year and are an amazing brand.
Yep.
Clippers are a playoff team. Angel City are changing. They're not just a good team. They're changing the face of women's soccer in America with their ownership group and all of that stuff. LAFC, who beat Orange County 5-1 in the Open Cup the other day, are obviously at their top of the league. They got what I think is a real football stadium, in a way that, you know, some sports teams, some MLS teams, it's not football, but LAFC have done that an amazing job. Galaxy have got an incredible history.
Yep.
And as you say, the Olympics, the World Cup, the golf. Yeah.
How about the fact the Rams just won the Super Bowl? The Chargers were one game away from making the playoffs. I mean, the future is so bright. You're right.
And then, you know, that new stadium, which is, I think, the most expensive stadium in the world. But, you know, you go there and it's just mind blowing. I went there for a Chargers preseason game and it's the most incredible facility. So I guess you've got this amazing job. So you just basically you quit after the Olympics in 2028, hand it off to someone else and go, yeah, good luck.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it's not really about, it doesn't start and stop with the Olympics. I mean, I'm using that as really kind of a barometer. A litmus test, kind of, you know, what can we get done drafting off of all those other events? Again, World Cup, you know, all those other things that are coming. How can we better our community by drafting off of, to your point, not only those mega events, but all these amazing organizations that are in this market and all the great things that they're doing?
So what are the biggest problems that LA sports scene faces across the different teams and the one-off events? Like, what are the big picture top three risks or threats to the LA sports market?
Well, I mean, you know, this is a crowded market. We have a lot. To your point, we have four, if you include Orange County. We've got four professional soccer teams in this market. You know what I mean? We've got two of everything. It's like Noah's Ark. We've got two of everything, you know. And so, I mean, and, you know, the weather and all the other things LA has to offer. LA is a pretty transient city. I mean, I think I'm a rare breed, born and raised here. There are not many born and raised Angelinos here. And so it's just, you know, I just think in other cities, it's like, you know, people in certain classes live in certain areas and you kind of very straightforward on where to market and how to market. In LA, you can never judge a book by its cover. People, you know, demographics, socioeconomic demographics are all over the board and layered on top of each other, really. You know what I mean? And so I don't know if there's any threats. I think the diversity of this town is really what has fueled the so many teams. There's something for everybody, which is really, I think, again, different than any other city, frankly, in the world, but definitely in the U.S. And so I just think the big challenge, I'd say, is like the challenge to these organizations or the sports industry in general is continuing to evolve and adjust to what this really unique market wants as a consumer, you know?
Okay. So changing tack a bit, what is your single greatest sporting achievement personally? So this is not about, you know, seeing something at Dodgers, but for you as a athlete when you were younger, what's your greatest sporting achievement?
Well, I would say, I played Division III baseball. You know, I'm 5-0, 100-0. You know, a left-handed pitcher. Slow and slower were my best pitches, Dan. So just to give you an idea, I didn't really set the world on fire. But my last college game as a senior, I started the game and took a no-hitter into the eighth inning. I gave it up in spectacular fashion by giving up a home run. So lost the shutout and the no hitter in one pitch, but ended up getting the win. And I would say kind of getting that win and pitching really well in my last college game was pretty special and something I'll remember for the rest of my life.
So. Amazing. And then obviously throwing. So do you remember who you threw to when you were called in to pitch?
Yeah. So it was Gary Sheffield and Paul LaDuca, Eric Karras, among others. So, you know, this was early 90s Dodgers, basically, but really, really, you know, you just don't realize how good these guys are. Because, of course, I'm thinking, if I was on that mound, could I get these guys out? And the short answer is never. I mean, Gary Sheffield was so surgical, you know what I mean? You know, five balls to left field, all line drives about 5 feet off the ground, five balls to center field. The trajectory a little higher, five balls in a row, one hop the wall. Five balls to left field, all home runs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, just like until you're the, you know, you just do not realize how just amazing these athletes are. So,
I'm sure. Actually, so, well, I'm getting to the final question, but I can ask you questions I've never asked anybody. So,
okay.
You know, if you work for the Dodgers for 22 years, an average of 81 home games. We're talking like, you know, assuming that you weren't off sick that often, we're looking like well over 1,500 games.
Yeah.
What is the worst ceremonial pitch that you've seen live?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Because one of my jobs in my early years at the Dodgers was I'd escort kind of the national anthem singers and kind of the first pitch people like down in the field. I can't remember the first pitch, you know, people get so nervous and I like to mess with people sometimes, you know what I mean? Before they get down, they're getting their head a little bit, but it was the national anthem sometimes were terrible. And those actually stuck out more than.
Oh, really? Got any particular, like, did someone forget the words?
No, I can't recall an individual person, but sometimes I would go back up to the offices and I said, like, who picked this person? Back then, Dan, you have to send in, you know, cassette tapes, you know what I mean? Or CDs of like, you sing the national anthem, because I didn't realize, you know, the national anthem is an extremely difficult song to sing. I guess it's got a lot of range. Again, I'm not a singer, so I have no idea, but what stood out to me was definitely the terrible singing at times, more so than the terrible first pitches.
Interesting.
Although the 50 Cent pitch, you know, was at the Mets like a couple years ago, you know, that's got to be right up there.
So. Yeah, yeah. The whole thing, again, it's one of those things, if you don't work in sport, you don't really appreciate it, but I recruit quite a lot of our national anthem singers just because I'm based in LA and I know a lot of people in the same
industry.
And it's so fun. We actually haven't had any bad ones, but we've had a couple of absolute stormers. We had a guy doing the an electric guitar national anthem, and he ended up like putting it behind his head and doing stuff with his
teeth.
That's
so cool.
And it was amazing. The players normally just stand there facing the flag, and with this guy, they would like turn around and stared at him.
That's great.
But yeah, no, it's fun. Putting all that stuff together. So you used to literally escort them out. I think it's a bit mean to wind up the ceremonial pitch people who are nervous anyway.
I know. Yeah, that was my younger years. You know what I mean? So, I think I've grown since then.
Last sports question, I guess, which is, what is your single greatest sporting memory highlight?
Wow. I mean, I've had so many, just being, you know, I was Kobe Bryant's last game, or, you know, Lakers game 7, or, you know, gosh, so many. I have to say, I think Eric Gagne coming in, that stretch that Eric Gagne had as a closer of the Dodgers, when he would come in and they would play Welcome to the Jungle, and everyone at Dodger Stadium would stick around, would normally come early, you know, come late, leave early kind of thing, but everyone stick around to hear. I still get goosebumps when I hear Welcome to the Jungle, and just remembering kind of those, you know, games he would come in and close the door on. That was electric and pretty cool. So,
because obviously you don't work for the Dodgers anymore. You are neutral. You work for all of the teams of LA.
That's
but presumably correct. You might know some people there still. So you put a call in and you go down to the Dodgers. And do you do it properly, like drinking and eating Dodger dogs and watching as a fan and maybe even leaving after 8 innings if you want to beat the traffic?
100% I do. 100%. But it's hard because that was my office for 22 years. So I can't really go incognito, Dan. It's like the security guards, the ushers, everyone knows me there. And so it's like a little hard. So I would, you know, sometimes I try to kind of wear a hat and a hoodie, you know what I mean? So I get recognized, but it's still fun. So.
Amazing. So, right. Now we are genuinely onto the last question, which we ask every guest, which is nothing to do with sport. Although I imagine you'll make it sport, which is, if you could drink any whiskey with anyone, what would you drink? Where would you drink it? And who would you drink it with?
Wow. Great question. Well, I would have to say, it was growing up, my favorite pitcher growing up was Nolan Ryan. I mean, physical specimen to be able to pitch as long as he did, as well as he did, you know, that just doesn't happen these days. You know what I mean? So, you know, I've never met Nolan Ryan. I would love to meet Nolan Ryan. And I would say, where would I like to, I mean, so I think I would love to, and I would love to watch a game with Nolan Ryan at Dodger Stadium. And of course, you kind of took my thunder a little bit, but it has to be Johnny Walker Blue Label. We'd have to drink together. So that's to be able, you know, like I said, so fortunate to be able to like be around Sandy Koufax and Tommy Lasorda, these amazing baseball minds, and hear the way they think. But I would say Nolan Ryan, and I would say at Dodger Stadium, drinking Johnny Walker Blue Label would be it.
Amazing. Yeah. Excellent. David Siegel, president of the LA Sports Council and former everything for the World Championship and bankrupt at times, LA Dodgers. Thank you very much for being part of the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan. Appreciate it.
I love scotch. Scotch. Scotch.
And don't forget to not just follow us on Twitter and Instagram at US of Dramerica, but also ask us questions and comment and say nice things.
And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if the mood takes you, you can leave us a review, as feedback is always welcome.
And drink whiskey. Sláinte.